You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into this Friday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. The trade deadline was yesterday. I had a busy day of work of not working and keeping up with all the nonsense going on around the league. I'm sure you all had a great day. The Pacers did nothing. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll talk about all the trades that affect the outlook of the team. And to do that with me, and we'll also preview tonight's game against the Celtics. And to do that with me, I have, I believe, lifelong Celtics fan and the coach of Washington and Jefferson University. Did I get that right?
Washington Jefferson College.
One of the assistant coaches there. Coach spins himself, Adam Spinella. Adam, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Tony, how are you this evening?
I'm good. Do you have a busy day as well, keeping up with the internet?
It's always a busy day. One of those things where you're trying to juggle your real life responsibilities and the maniacal nature of NBA Twitter, which is a fantasy land in its own right.
It's crazy, man. Woj is the man today. He had some kind of stranglehold on the market of breaking the news on trades.
Yeah, he definitely shut out Shams today. That was a big win for Woj.
All day it was Woj, and then Shams finally gets one, and it's Bruno Caboclo for Malachi Richardson.
Yeah, that's second tier, if you ask me.
Hey, well, we want to talk about all the trades that might affect the Pacers. That one, in theory, probably doesn't. The Raptors just pushed their paying of their rookies 2 years down the line. I thought Bruno was going to get cut by the Kings, and he didn't. They cut Georgios Papagiannis instead, which is weird. But I don't have much to say on that move.
Yeah, not much for me either. I mean, again, it's the Raptors just trying to have some future flexibility, and they, you know, it's more than you could ever ask for to get from Bruno. It is a guy who's still got a little bit of upside on his rookie contract, so why not?
Anything that is above a zero in the asset scale is worth trading Bruno for at this point. But I think the place to start is Cleveland, because they pretty much dictated the whole day. Their first trade, which was something, was Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye and their own first-round pick, which meant they couldn't trade the Brooklyn pick for a lot of stuff. Technically, they still could trade it, but we're not going to get into that. But they traded their own pick, Isaiah Thomas and Channing Frye, for Larry Nance Jr. and Jordan Clarkson from the Lakers. What were your thoughts on that move?
You know, I saw that one come through on its own before the second trade got announced, and I was kind of scratching my head a little bit. Was really just kind of thinking, is this really the best that the Cavs can get in return for Isaiah? And I think it speaks more to Isaiah's value right now than it does to really the haul that Cleveland tried to get for him. Like, who wants to pay Isaiah this summer after kind of a botched tenure in Cleveland, so to speak? The guy can't defend, but it's amazing. The guy was averaging like 30 points a game a season ago and was probably my favorite player in the league being a Celtics fan. And yet here we are just 1 year later, and it's getting, you know, Cavs have to give a first round pick in order to find somebody to take him. It's shocking.
It really was. And I think it really goes to show how Zach Lowe wrote this perfectly with his words in his article about all the Cavs moves today. But, you know, if he was like if the toxicity he had in the locker room was as much as it was reported, but he was playing really well, it wouldn't matter as much. But, you know, if you're talking and annoying people and you're playing awful, that just has such a damper on your team's chemistry and outlook. And they've really been struggling since he came back. So I didn't know if they were going to trade him or not, but it made sense in a way. But, you know, to trade him and a first and an expiring for, you know, Nance is really good. And I think he's going to help them a lot with a lot of the little things on the court. But to get Clarkson's money, you know, it was definitely something interesting. But I think it improves their future outlook ever so slightly, although it did seem like a loss in the trade column for them right away.
Yeah, just taking that one trade on its face, you know, you wonder, is Jordan Clarkson going to be a guy that they trust to run the point? Is he going to share the ball? Like, he's not a knockdown three-point shooter. I think of him more as a bully-driving combo guard, and I don't know how effective those guys are next to LeBron James in the long run. Love the acquisition of Nance. And obviously, everybody kind of predicted if there was one guy that they needed as salary filler to be moved, it was going to be Channing Frye. So you sacrifice a little bit of front court spacing there. But all in all, I mean, the second trade is really the one that got Cleveland back to being a team that we can think of out East as really an NBA title favorite.
Yeah, I think we could skip the Wade one. It was so weird because the talks with the Jazz and Kings were like being flown around and was trying to figure out the pieces, and then Woj comes in and is like, oh, by the way, they traded Dwayne Wade back to the Heat. And
then- yeah, that's – I mean, again, it shows kind of how quickly NBA players age or kind of drop out of favor. But 2 years ago, that would have been a huge, huge move and huge news. And right now, it's just kind of – blah, like it gets lost within the day.
Well, it's huge. That one's kind of, I mean, we'll talk about that one after we do the other Cavs one, I guess, technically, but I think it's just really shedding tax for Cleveland. Like, he's not going to help you anymore when you get more guys. Might as well trade him away. And in a cool trade like that, he goes back to his home team. That's pretty awesome. But the second trade that you just referenced, I have to make sure I get this right because there were a lot of moving parts. So I think the Cavs won this trade by a mile. They got Rodney Hood and George Hill. And the Kings got Joe Johnson, Iman Shumpert, $2.1 million in cash considerations, and a second round pick from the Heat in 2020. Is that right?
Yep.
And the Jazz got Derrick Rose, who they immediately will waive, Jay Crowder, and $1.1 million in cash.
Yeah. If you're as Cleveland, you give up a 2020 second round pick, Jay Crowder, and Iman Shumpert, and you get back a really good two-way point guard in George Hill and a high upside wing scorer in Rodney Hood. That is a huge win. Huge.
Slam dunk. My thought on – I mean, this my initial reaction to this one is the Jazz are just way higher on Jay Crowder than I am, apparently.
I love Crowder. I think he's still got a ton of value if he can recoup playing the way he did in Boston. He was kind of a mismatched piece in Cleveland for whatever reason. In theory, I think a lot of people thought it would work, but it for some reason didn't. But I think it's way too soon to give up on him as being a really, really useful either, you know, spot starter at the three or the four, or just a great wing rotation player.
Yeah, I'm not giving up on him for sure. He was really good last year. His contract is still sensational. It's just I clearly – would not have valued him at the level of Rodney Hood and George Hill by himself. Nonetheless, to get off of Shumpert's salary and get out of Rose, who another possible locker room cancer, who's literally away from the team for 2 months. I mean, that is Kobe Altman did a home run with this one, and this is the one that really made the Cavs back to being easily the biggest threat in the East to me.
Yeah, I agree with that. And from Utah's perspective, I mean, they only got rid of Joe Johnson and took back Jay Crowder. Johnson's going to be a free agent at the end of the season anyway. They were discussing buyout there. So to really turn that into Crowder, you shed some money this year, and you get two more seasons of a great contract, like you just said. So, I mean, kind of a win for Utah, or a huge win for Cleveland, which is what matters most for you Pacers fans out there. But, again, everybody seems to be taking advantage of the Sacramento Kings these days. So Cleveland got a huge boost from their front office.
Yeah, so the Kings get Shumpert's bad money and just a guy who I think's not going to want to be in Sacramento at all. So not sure how nice he'll be for the locker room. Joe Johnson, who they will probably buy out tomorrow or today as you're listening to this, and a distant second from a team that is never really bad in the Heat. So they and cash, I guess that matters, but towards the buyout. But not too solid of a trade deadline for the Sacramento Kings. They shed a little bit of money off the salary cap this year and a decent amount next year getting off of Hill. But other than that, it's they were really just here to be the facilitator of a bigger deal in which they were the loser.
Yeah, the only positive for Sacramento is getting off George Hill's contract, which, again, as Pacers fans know, he's a really good player. I don't know if he's $20 million a year worth. That was a bogus contract when they signed him to it this summer. It's Cleveland's problem now.
It sure is. This one, I think it is important to talk about how it impacts the Pacers. And I think there's a lot of layers to this. First of all, this year, the Pacers are 3-1 against the Cavs, but now they're a totally different team with way more cohesive players, less locker room cancers. They still have LeBron James. Their outlook for this season is substantially better, and the way the seedings are lining up, there's a chance that they end up playing in the first round, which is scary if the Pacers were to make the playoffs and have to play this completely stacked roster now. Another one is they kept the Brooklyn pick while also getting Rodney Hood, and I guess this counts for the first round too, Nance and Clarkson, who are all younger guys, so their future outlook, even if LeBron leaves, is still solid. And since the Pacers, you know, are probably going to be peaking in 2-3 seasons, you know, now the Cavs are just another team in that mix with them when that time comes.
Yeah, they've done a great job of making themselves appealing to LeBron James in the short term and the long term. But I think the biggest question mark, I mean, from a coaching perspective, it's really hard to try to, you know, revamp your entire offensive and defensive schemes or teach them all new while you're going through the rigors of the season. So Ty Lue, yeah, has his work cut out for him in that regard. They'll get a huge boost when Kevin Love returns, mm-hmm, whenever that may be. And I think we're anticipating sometime in mid to late March, or just in time for the postseason push. But yeah, it's I mean, Cleveland got a lot better today, talent wise.
They did, and it's really scary how that's going to look for them in the future. I'm going to jump a team on the list of trade teams just because we're still talking about the Cavs. At the same time that trade went down, they traded away the guy that they signed off the buyout, Dwayne Wade, for a heavily protected second-round pick from the Heat, which I'm guessing will be top 55 protected and will never convey. But shed some tax for Cleveland, which helps them this year, even though their tax bill got a little bit bigger today, I believe, in the hole. But the Heat get a franchise legend back for the rest of the year for next to nothing, and that'll be really cool to see him come out. Zach Lowe was great today, by the way, but Zach Lowe tweeted that his first ovation back in Miami is going to be awesome. I agree. I actually, if that's the same day as the Pacers game, I will probably watch that Heat game because that'll be so cool.
Zach Lowe's always great. I don't know if he has a bad day. That guy's a machine. He's the best.
If you haven't read it, go read his Cavs article, listeners and Adam, from today. It was super good, you know, outlining why they made all the moves they made and how it affects their outlook. And, you know, he does talk about how Kevin Pelton didn't like their whole day, and Kevin Pelton's a smart guy too. But, you know, I think in the grand scheme of things, you have to call it a win for the Cavs on the day.
Yeah, it gets, like we talked about, Isaiah, who is a locker room problem, it seemed, gets him out of the locker room. You get George Hill, who's a pretty decent player, and then some young pieces that you can win with now and continue to build around in years to come. So they've did a great job splitting the difference of everything, all things considered.
I agree. That's a good Cavs day. And now we can move on to another divisional opponent for the Pacers, who made two moves today, the Detroit Pistons. But neither of their moves were even close to as splashy as any of the Cavs' moves. In the morning, they sent away the recently suspended for domestic violence Willie Reed to the Bulls for Jameer Nelson to shore up their backup point guard position with Reggie Jackson out. It's been Ish Smith and I want to say Dwight Bucks. I don't know how to say his last name. Yeah, is that right?
Yeah.
Bikes. Yeah, something like that. So getting Nelson for Reed for them is big for many reasons. One, that Nelson's just actually helpful at backup point guard. And two is that Reed, who got waived by the Bulls, was never in their plans, and given this whole domestic violence suspension thing, just getting a bad guy off your team is always huge. So that was a win for the Pistons. I thought right away when that was all that was announced that they dominated the trade, but then there is a pick swap in the 2020 second round for the Bulls, so they get the better of those two second round picks, which could be something, 2022, which could be something because it's the year after Blake Griffin's contract is up, but could be nothing. Who really knows? But that's the whole trade. Nothing really to talk about there, really.
I mean, Jameer Nelson is reunited with his coach in Orlando, Stan Van Gundy. So
he was an all-star under Van Gundy before.
Yeah, it's a nice story. And again, a nice stopgap for the Pistons while they're dealing with some injury concerns. And again, you think of a guy like Nelson, a lot of people thought he would be a candidate to be bought out. But if the Pistons knew they were getting rid of Willie Reed, and all they're giving away is a potential pick swap. They're not giving away an actual pick. It's just the order in which it potentially could be chosen in. I think you pull the trigger on making sure you get Nelson right now. And Detroit was able to stay underneath the tax when all things were said and done today. So, a good aggressive move from their front office.
Yeah, and Willie Reed's salary slightly less than Nelson's because of their veteran years in the league. So the Bulls save a little bit of money. They were probably going to, like you said, waiver buyout Nelson anyway. So they save a little money and move up for sure. At least they get the better of the two picks in 2022. So that's probably why they did it. And, you know, Willie Reed, maybe he can figure out his life a little bit before coming back to basketball. Not a terrible player, but, you know, a lot of off-court stuff there. But their second trade was the stab in my heart. As you guys have heard me preaching to not this Adam, but Adam Friedman, our other co-host, a bunch. And with Nate Duncan on, we talked about that too. James Ennis, the guy I really wanted. You actually turned me on to James Ennis trades with the Wizards proposal we had in our little group chat. But James Ennis goes to the Pistons for Bryce Johnson and a second round pick, which is a complete home run for the Pistons to me.
Oh, huge home run. I'm one of the biggest Ennis fans you'll find, just as a guy who still has potential to be a really good wing scorer, a decent defender. He's shooting close to 60% from two-point range this year. He's got range out to three. He's long and wiry. And honestly, the Pistons needed a player just like that that they can plug in on the wings. They were really, really thin after the Avery Bradley trade. And being able to turn Bryce Johnson into something here is a huge get for them.
Yeah, I did not know Ennis's two-point – yeah, wow. He's a crazy high two-point percentage this year. He's 37% career three-point shooter. Not terrible defender, and a wing like that is hard to find. A cheap wing like that is hard to find, and to get him for Bryce Johnson, who is bouncing around the league because he's just not that great, and a second is huge, and they can easily re-sign him using early bird. So really, really big trade for the Pistons here. For Memphis, I think the writing was on the wall that Ennis was probably gone this summer. They didn't want to have to pay him. They probably should have traded a lot more guys, which we'll get to later, but getting a second and I guess a flyer with Johnson is their thought process, but home run for Detroit. He's probably worth more than that.
Yeah. I mean, I think Memphis knew Ennis was gone at the end of the season anyway, so get what you can, try out a youngster, see if he sticks, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we all know the spiel, but Memphis is in trouble, and Detroit was, again, one of the few team, I think the only team that was able to get a deal done with the Grizzlies in their particularly stingy front office. They did some poor negotiating today, but Detroit was able to wring Ennis out of them, which is a great get for the Pistons.
Second worst trade deadline of the day goes to the Memphis Grizzlies. The Kings lose. Grizzlies get second to last. This is only sort of on topic. It's related to this trade. I want you to rank these players from best to worst, all right?
God, okay.
All right, Bryce Johnson, Ivan Rabb, Deonta Davis.
Oh, you're killing me, Tony. Best to worst, I will go actually in inverse order that you mentioned them. I will go Davis, and then Rabb, and then Johnson.
That's probably my order too, so that's good.
I'm still a Davis believer a little bit.
He was projected so high in that draft. He fell really far. So that is probably the future of the Grizzlies front court. So hopefully one of those guys turns out to be at least a rotation player, because Memphis is not looking too hot pretty much anywhere on the court right now and long term. So maybe Bryce Johnson could eventually play, but I'm very doubtful. Hopefully that second round pick can help them, because they need all the help they can get. But the first two teams we've not done, the Cavs and Pistons, two divisional opponents that the Pacers do not play again this year. The next team that we'll do, they do play again this year, the Hornets. The Hornets traded away Johnny O'Brien, who I don't know how much he's played this year. I probably should have pulled his B-ball ref page up before I started talking. But they've traded away Johnny O'Brien and two second-round picks, which years escaped me, for Willie Hernan Gomez. And I think that is a great trade for the Knicks.
And I think it's a great trade for the Hornets.
Ooh. I think the Knicks win this one pretty significantly.
Yeah, I like Hernan Gomez. I think he's the type of player you take a flyer on, just because he's rated so highly in terms of his efficiencies. I think the difficulty for Charlotte now is you obviously gave up a couple second rounders that could be pretty meaningful. How do you clear minutes to try to get something out of Hernan Gomez while he's on his rookie contract? Because they have a bunch of other big guys. They got Dwight Howard, Cody Zeller, Frank Kaminsky. How do you clear enough minutes in order to play Hernan Gomez? That's the question.
Yeah, well, that's kind of why I liked it for the Knicks, is similar reasoning of they just weren't going to play him. And I think they knew that. So might as well get two not terrible second-round picks for a guy you're not going to play. Johnny O'Brien is just a guy. I don't think he's going to be in the league much longer.
Yeah, I think the Knicks either have or are planning to get rid of him right away.
That would not – is he – well, it doesn't matter. We're past the guarantee date, but I don't know what his contract is beyond this year. I doubt it's anything.
No, he's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. He's on one of those, near minimum contracts, like 1.5 mil.
I bet they keep him and waive a point guard because the Knicks made another trade, which we'll get to momentarily. But yeah, I like Willie Hernan Gomez, and I know that Will Fur at 8.9 seconds wrote about a second contract guy, Hernan Gomez being one of the better ones, which I doubt he would leave the team that just traded for him. But, you know, for the Hornets, I get it. Like, they get some youth for no first-round picks, but they just don't have a lot of playing time to offer him, and that's why it's kind of odd for me that they went for him.
Yeah, and of all the moves that, you know, Charlotte was pretty heavily rumored to be shopping Kemba Walker or trying to get rid of Nick Batum or do all of these other things to kind of restart their salary cap situation, it's kind of strange that they would actually give up a couple second round picks in order to get Hernan Gomez. While I think he's the right type of guy to do that move with, you're right, it is a little bit head scratching that Charlotte's put themselves in that situation.
Yeah, I don't know how good I feel about Rich Cho as a GM, but
great food blogger.
His food blog is pretty cool. I actually didn't know he had that until I heard him on Nate Duncan's podcast. He was really entertaining, and his food blog sounds cool, but I don't know if I think he got pretty lucky with a Kemba Walker contract and has kind of stumbled since.
Yep. Yeah, they don't draft great there either.
No, they do not. Yeah, that Justice Winslow trade's going to sink a man's career.
Don't remind me.
Well, speaking of the Knicks, they made another trade, which I might have the details wrong here too, but it was a three-team trade. They sent Doug McDermott to the Mavs and a second-round pick to the Nuggets. The Nuggets sent Emmanuel Mudiay and a second-round pick to the Knicks, and the Mavs sent Devin Harris to the Nuggets. Is that correct?
Yeah, and the picks are kind of the key part here. Both of them had essentially, I like to call them pick swap options, where it's kind of they get the lower of one or the other based on different trades that they had made with either team. So the Knicks end up with the lower of Sacramento and Portland's pick this year.
Portland's.
Which, yeah, means it's probably going to be Portland's. And the Nuggets, they end up with the lower, of the Clippers and Knicks, which probably means Clippers. So again, these picks are kind of a wash here. If you think about it, the Knicks probably end up getting a little bit of a worse pick.
Yeah, I like this for the Knicks, though. Just to get a, like, I get why Knicks fans are not happy in the scope of, like, okay, now French Frank's going to play less. But to me, getting another bite of the apple at point guard when they have nothing there is a good move, especially if it means you don't really give up anything beyond McDermott, who probably was not in their future plans. So I get why the Knicks did this, and I liked it. And I kind of wanted Moody. I kind of wanted the Pacers to throw seconds at Moutier and take him into space. So I was really upset when this happened, but I like it for the Knicks. I think it makes some sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think the frustration for their fan base too is, like, a week ago they were a roster of all big men. Like, they had too many big men. They can't find time to play them all. Now they have like 8,000 point guards on their roster. How are they going to, you know, figure out how to get playing time for everybody? And the news with Porzingis being done for the year really shifts the focus onto French Frank and trying to develop him a little bit. So it's, I understand the frustration that Knicks fans might have, but Mudiay, again, we've talked about the second contract and the guys that you really take a chance on that didn't perform well with their first team. Mudiay is absolutely one of those.
I kind of believe in Mudiay still. I have no idea why. Pretty high turnover guy. Mm-hmm. He's shooting better this year finally, but you know, I just like high usage point guards. Just eventually one day, if it happens, they just click and all of a sudden they're really talented. And I you know, his usage has steadily dropped, but still hovering around 25% for his career. So I kind of believe Mudiay one day is going to get it, but I prepare to eat my words on that.
I'm excited to see how he does in a Jeff Hornacek system, because they've been pretty in the past when he was with Phoenix, they were pretty up-tempo, a lot of high pick and roll type of stuff. That seems like the type of game that Mudiay is meant for, not the slow down play through Jokic style that Denver really went to. So this is probably going to be a really good change for him.
Yeah. And he often, not super often, but you know, he had to play with Murray sometimes. So he was like off ball occasionally. I don't think that'll happen as much in New York. I have another rankings question for you.
Okay, here we go. Are we doing Knicks point guards now?
Yes. Only three of them. So not long term, because that's an easier answer. But right now, Best to worst, Moutier, Burke, and French Frank.
Okay, not long term, but just if I were trying to win a playoff series.
Long term, Burke is last, but right now, right. He's not, I don't think.
So if I were trying to win a postseason series this year, those are my 3 point guards. Who would I put out?
Your closing lineup has blank.
I would go Moutier, Burke, and then French Frank.
Yeah, that's a hard one, though. That one's pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, let me put it this way. I'll go Moutier for like 32 minutes, and then if I need offense, I'll go Burke, and if I need defense, I'll go French Frank. How's that sound?
That's good. That's good. Yeah, right. That's got to be it. Now, Jarrett Jack is I hope Jarrett Jack, for the sake of the Knicks, doesn't play another minute the rest of the year, even though I know he will.
Jarrett Jack, man, he's old.
I agree. I don't know how he got his deal this year, but he did. For the Pacers, beyond not getting Moutier, which is disappointing, doesn't do a ton for the Knicks' future outlook, I guess. Maybe it's a little better if Moutier turns out to be something good, but, you know, McDermott could have been – probably not. McDermott was okay, so, you know, kind of a wash in terms of their future outlook, so not a ton of effect on Indiana. Denver gets a backup point guard. They have to play Denver again this year, so Denver's a little better, so maybe that affects them – very immediately in the short term. Dallas also gets McDermott. They play them again. So I guess they have two harder games now, but not a ton of effect on really the league at all.
Yeah, and it's, again, injuries and things will pop up here and then. So I think for the Pacers in terms of facing a bunch of these other teams, I think a lot of the sellers at the trade deadline didn't do a ton to get worse. Whereas I think a lot of years we see teams that have veterans and are out of the playoff race try to strip those away, sell them, and get anything they can. We didn't see a ton of that right now. That could change with buyouts coming in the next couple weeks. But I don't think that the lower tier of NBA teams really got themselves a lot worse in the short term, which could mean fewer easy wins for the Pacers moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. Not a lot of selling at all. We'll have to talk about one of those teams when we talk about the Celtics in a minute. But we have one more Eastern Conference trade that I think kind of affects the Pacers, but this one's a little bit of a better way. The Magic, in their new regime of Jeff Weltman, traded away old regime Rob Hennigan's draft pick of Elfrid Payton to the Phoenix Suns for their the Grizzlies' second round pick this year. And hilariously, the Suns got that pick in a salary dump for Troy Daniels, and they were able to use that pick to get Elfrid Payton. So that is the only good thing the Suns have done asset management-wise in the last 10 years, basically. But the Magic get a probably top 35 pick for Payton. How do you feel about that?
I think that's fair value. Again, listening to Zach Lowe, to kind of talk about this and project what the value was for Payton. There's no way Orlando was getting a first rounder for him. He's a train wreck on the defensive end. So for Phoenix, I mean, that is a pretty good return. We call that nice GMing from McDonough there to be able to turn that salary dump pick that they took and make that into Elfrid Payton right now. But Phoenix needed, I mean, they needed a point guard. They needed to try something. Payton and Booker, excuse me, that's got to be like the worst statistical backcourt defensively in like the history of Western civilization.
For some reason, I don't hate Elfrid Payton. Like, he's not I don't know. I get like I doubt his shooting is real this year, but like he does enough things okay that I like him.
Yeah, he fools people with like the random like triple doubles. Like, if you looked at his stat line, you'd be like, oh, Elfrid Payton's pretty good. Like, he's got a chance of being a mid-tier point guard. And then you watch him play a lot, and he does so many frustrating things, and he doesn't defend, and he's just got this awkward shot. Like, he hits his hair when he shoots.
That was a funny clip against the Nets when his hair made him airball that, like, five-foot floater.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's a lot of things to like and be worth a flyer on. But really interesting what Orlando does here. I got to say, Tony, I was shocked that the Lakers kept Isaiah Thomas and that Orlando didn't try to get in on that with Elfrid Payton. I'm shocked.
I think you can get an asset for Payton, and I think they know that they will have the space and the opportunity to sign Thomas in 3 months. So I don't know how much sense it made for them to do that.
I mean, they have, I'm trying to look at the cap right now. They have like $16 million in cap space projected for this summer. Yep. And that's that's before Aaron Gordon. Like, I guess that's enough to go out there and get Isaiah, but I would want his bird rights too. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I don't know how his cap holds small. So yes, that does make sense.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
And again, if you're only getting a second round pick back for Peyton, like why not try to give Peyton and one of the many second round picks Orlando has and get a guy like Isaiah?
And I'm sure the Lakers would take the youth.
Right. And they, I mean, obviously Isaiah is going to be in weird position next to Lonzo there anyway. Like I don't get why the Lakers want to keep him. So yeah, it kind of baffled me that he didn't get moved and Orlando popped into my head as a sensible destination.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this trade shakes out as it goes down. The first big move of this new Magic regime, and my old bio on Twitter before I started writing was, I'm smarter than Rob Hennigan. So I'm very intrigued by how the Magic navigate going forward because Hennigan left them in a horrible, horrible, horrible position. So their first move is fine, I would say. Pacers perspective, they don't get Elfrid Payton. I know there were rumblings of them talking to the Magic. Apparently that went nowhere. I don't know how much Payton would really help this team anyway. Like you said, he's not like particularly great at anything. Even if a shooting is real this year, that's all he would be good at in theory. Maybe they get a decent asset with that second rounder, but I doubt it. So pretty neutral move for Indiana, who's already played Phoenix twice this year. So not a lot there. I think the last thing to talk about for the day is players who didn't get moved and how that affects both the league and Indiana. And the place to start there is the guy who got apparently rumored to every single team in the league at about 4 p.m. today, Tyreke Evans.
It's so surprising that the Grizzlies couldn't lower their asking price. They've been asking for a first-round pick for Evans all along, and you take a look at his production – it's certainly there. But Memphis, they have no leverage when it comes to trying to get more value out of Evans than he's really worth. I mean, yeah, the guy's playing well, but he signed to a one-year deal, which means Memphis cannot go over the cap next year to retain him unless they use their mid-level exception. And because of that, it seemed like almost a guarantee that Evans would move on, that the Grizzlies would want to get younger and use their space for something else. And they couldn't lower their asking price enough. Like, teams came in. I saw either a tweet or some sort of report talking about how Denver came in and offered an expiring in a second or 2 seconds. And Memphis said no, they wanted a first. And it's really, really surprising that the front office would mess up that badly to not see what market value really is and capitalize on it.
They sat him out for 4 games.
Yeah.
That's what makes me so mad. It's like you literally told this guy you're going to trade him. He probably in his mind thinks he's going to be on a playoff team. And then you just don't send him anywhere. Okay, so here are the tweets. Zach Lowe: Wizards were among teams in on Tyreke Evans. Likely would have parted with 2 seconds, but Grizz made it clear they wanted more. During the Celtics-Grizzlies talks, I'm told Boston offered 2 second-rounders and Yabu Sele for Tyreke Evans. Denver gave Memphis the choice of 2 offers, Emmanuel Mudiay in a second or expiring contract with multiple seconds. Memphis wanted more. What do you want? Like, the Denver seconds aren't bad. The Celtics, Yabu Sele is a good young player. I mean, I know the Wizards probably weren't offering anything great, but that's 2 good offers. And, like, their hope now for getting anything out of this guy, like, this season is wasted, right? So their only hope is that they can get him for the MLE and then his early bird is enough to trade him for something next year. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah, it's asset mismanagement at its finest. It's kind of sticking to your guns on what you think you deserve and not being able to kind of read the climate around you. Like, we're in for a huge cap crunch this summer. Teams are really valuing draft picks or first round picks right now because they're so valuable. I mean, if you're not willing to budge at all on your asking price, yeah, like, there's a reason the Grizzlies are going to be destined for mediocrity now.
Because Chris Wallace is the worst GM in the league.
Don't tell my boy Dell Demps that.
I guess Demps got lucky with AD too.
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah, I think he's made more good moves than Wallace. I think he's made more bad and good moves than Wallace.
Anthony Davis is the only player on New Orleans roster that was drafted by the organization.
Uh-huh.
Throw that out there.
Yes, but I mean, I think the Mirotić trade was good, and I think the Cousins trade was good, and I think the Jrue Holiday trade was good.
Yeah, you can make good individual deals, but at some point, not having any first round picks is going to catch up to you.
It is. It already has. Yeah. But I don't know. That's close. I think it's those two. No, the Kings, but there are a lot of not good GMs. Yeah. But yeah, Tyreke was the big guy who didn't get moved. From a Celtics perspective, for you, did you think they were actually going to get him, or do you think that was just all talk?
I wanted them to get Evans. I like what he brings to the table. But I'm happy with Monroe and mm-hmm. using the DPE to sign Greg Monroe. I think that's a fine move. And again, I didn't want to part from Yabusele. I really like him. And I definitely didn't want to give up Marcus Smart, because for whatever cap reasons we'll see coming this summer, I think he's a guy Boston can keep. So, I'm fine with Boston's inactivity. Would have liked Evans there. But again, when the Grizzlies' asking price is so high, I think it's probably best that the Celtics stood pat.
Yeah, I agree with that. Is there anyone else that didn't get moved that you thought was going to get moved that's worth talking about?
Yeah, I was a little surprised the Hawks didn't try to move Bellinelli or Ilyasova.
Wow.
Yeah, those are guys that I really thought would find a new home. Again, expiring contracts on a rebuilding team. It just wasn't. There wasn't much of a market for that this year because, again, people are valuing draft picks with the cap crunch coming. So probably going to see them on the buyout market, but who knows?
I also think teams are valuing draft picks because they just want youth in the pipeline while there's no shot at beating Houston or Golden State.
Yeah, that could be it too.
Millions of reasons not to trade them. And the Cavs are the only team that traded them, and lo and behold, they're one of the teams that thinks they can beat Houston and Golden State. So that is why that is my calibrating theory at the moment, but understandable why teams are not doing that. Yeah, that is a good one. Bellinelli is going to make some team very happy when they get him for the room exception or less when he gets bought out.
Yeah, he's going to be a good playoff addition somewhere. I'm just surprised that no one was able to give the Hawks exactly what they were asking for.
I agree. I thought that one for sure. Ilyasova, I'm not as sure. I think he's in a trade clause. Well, the non-bird rights trade, no trade clause, but maybe to do with it.
Yeah, I think they do have his bird rights because they traded for him from, I believe that was
the Thunder.
Yeah.
Did he go through Philly in the interim of the Jeremy Grant trade there? Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have the details in front of me here.
Yeah. I'm surprised the Hawks did not do more. They kind of just, we didn't even talk about the Luke Babbitt trade because it's kind of useless, but they did a lot of very marginal moves today and none of them were really anything.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. I got nothing else unless you want to talk about another trade.
Nope. That's it for the deadline for me in the Eastern Conference. I mean, everybody got, other than Cleveland, everybody got a hair better. But it's, to me at the top, it's still that three team race, Cleveland, Toronto, and Boston.
I'm with you there. I agree. I don't think anyone else really has a chance unless the Bucks somehow figure out a way to put it together, but we'll see about that. So I think I want to talk a little bit about the Pacers deadline before we talk about this Celtics-Pacers game. The only rumors that they were rumored to be in were, I don't know how much you kept up with this, was for Kenneth Faried and taking on his money next year in exchange for a first-round pick from Denver, which as Denver I probably wouldn't have done because he's not totally dead money and he doesn't make enough that I feel like you have to give up a first to get off of him. And the other one was Al Jefferson for Damari Carroll. So give the Nets about $11 million in room next year and the Pacers just get Damari Carroll to be a 3-and-D guy for them. That one I probably would have done because I really like Damari Carroll, even though I understand that his money's not great. But I think standing pat was a good choice for a team like this who's exceeding expectations and will have a ton of cap space in the summer.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, they have, I think they're, what, $5 million, $6 million underneath the cap?
$5.8 million, yep.
Yeah, coming next summer. So it's not a ton of room, but because of the partial guarantees on the contracts of Bogdanovich, Collison, and Jefferson, they do have a ton of flexibility this summer. And I think it was probably the right move for the Pacers to stand pat and then reassess things, especially with Al Jefferson, because he's only got, I think, a $4 million
yep.
guarantee for next year. Like if you can move him in June or July and somebody else who really wants and needs immediate cap space is able to take his contract, I think you probably get more in return for getting rid of Jefferson than you would right now. Means the Pacers don't get enough help to get them, you know, through this season. Like Carroll would definitely be a piece that helps them right now. But I think patience is a virtue, and it's good for the Pacers front office to really believe in this group and see what they can really do.
Yeah. And depending on the, you know, a lot of people who listen know this, depending on the, you know, the decisions that Thaddeus Young and Corey Joseph make and however the team decides to handle those partial guarantees, they can get up to like $45 million in room. But if they get up to $45 million in room, they'll need like 6 rotation players. So it's kind of like fake cap space, honestly, when you have that many needs. But so many decisions that it's TBD how much space they'll truly have. I look forward to see how they handle the situation. But you want to talk some Pacers Celtics?
Let's do it.
I don't want to have to talk about the last time these teams played, but I think we have to. The Pacers were getting smacked early. The Celtics made like their first 12 shots in a row or something. They were up 38-21 at the end of the first quarter, and the Pacers clawed back slowly throughout the whole game. They finally took the lead with a minute to go. They have the ball in the lead, and then Bogdanovich threw the defining moment of his season, lobbing the ball into the middle of the court. Terry Rozier steals it and dunks it. How pumped were you?
It was a great, great road win for the Celtics. I mean, they were rolling at the time. I think they were like 25, like they had like 25 wins, were clearly top of the Eastern Conference. And the Pacers were doing great. And I was really excited to see how those two teams would match up. And it was, that was an awesome stealing game for Rozier. That was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you got to give him credit for making the play, right? Like, I can't take that away from him. He did everything he was supposed to, and a big moment for a guy that the Celtics are the only team who believed in. So, I mean, they deserve for him to be good more than anyone, really. But, you know, just like you're up, they were up by one. They had the ball with 7 seconds to go. They threw it in. Joseph, who had made his last like 13 free throws, catches, just stand there and you win.
Yeah.
Throws to Bogdanovich, who had made his last 17 free throws. Stand there and you win. Tries to throw it to Oladipo at the top of the key to keep killing clock, and that was it. So that was the worst ending of any game this season. Oladipo led them on a frivolous comeback, 38 points for nothing. But I think there's going to have to be some adjustments made in this game, and the Celtics have a new player in Greg Monroe, so it's going to be a whole different game. Monroe is currently playing in his first game, I believe, for the Celtics as we are talking against the Wizards. What do you expect him to bring? Do you think he'll be more of a backup center? How's he going to work with Baines? I don't know what to expect from him.
Yeah, I don't either. I think the long-term hope is to try to use him as an offensive anchor on the second unit. I think that's probably where most back-to-the-basket scoring bigs have their best functionality these days. First units are a little more long and switchy and athletic and space and pace around ball screen stuff. I think you can stagger his minutes with Kyrie Irving a little bit and just have somebody that's, again, somebody that you go to for a bucket. And that's really invaluable in the league right now. I think Boston's bench really kind of fizzled out lately in terms of their offensive production. Again, when Kyrie is not on the floor, who's really the guy that can go and create his own shot? Monroe is somebody you can throw the ball to inside. So I'd look for Boston to try to keep him in a bench role and continue to do the same type of, you know, starting lineup mumbo jumbo that they do with Baines and Horford jumping in, or try to go a little bit smaller with somebody else instead of Baines.
Pretty solid 3-big rotation.
Yeah. That's a good pickup for the Celtics.
I agree. So another thing that I don't know a ton about with the Celtics is the last time these two teams played, Tatum was really good, but he was killing it in the mid range. He only took 1 3 and he made it, but he was 6 of 8 inside the arc. And I know, well, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure he's kind of hit a rookie wall recently, if I'm correct about that.
Yep.
Okay. What has been going on with him? Is it just that his shot's not falling now, or are our teams kind of adjusting to his really good shooting percentages and making things harder for him?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of both. If anything, it's more so just the rookie wall. And I mean, it can't be. I mean, he's played 55 games already this season, and that takes a huge toll on you. In college, you play what, like 30 in a season, if you're really lucky. Yeah. So, you know, he's been, I'm just trying to look up the stats right here. Since January 1st and the calendar turned, he has shot 42% from the field and 35% from three. So it's like, those are still really good numbers.
Those are fine numbers.
Yeah. Like, but it wasn't kind of the superhuman type of thing that we thought it would be. Based on how hot to the season he started. So it's like, is that a rookie wall? Sure. But it's like, he's still producing. He's shooting 83% from the free throw line. I mean, he's fine.
Yeah. You know, my thing with him was funny because at Duke, I didn't really like him. He didn't like beat a ton of guys off the dribble. He just had a nasty, like, pull up mid ranger, but man, was I wrong about him. Like, he is such a money shooter and he just knows where to be. He's really smart. Brad's got him doing all the right things. So I do like Tatum a lot, and I think he's a guy to watch in this game because Bogdanović has improved slightly on-ball defense, but his off-ball defense is still just atrocious, and any screen to get Tatum open is a good shot for the Celtics. So I do worry about that matchup in this game.
Yeah, and the, I mean, the first time that these teams played earlier this year in that 112-111 thriller, Marcus Smart and Kyrie Irving combined for 10 turnovers.
Yes, they
and
did.
A lot of that was from the pesky backcourt defense from Oladipo and Collison. Those are two guys that are have some of the quickest hands in the game. They can stay with anybody and keep them in front. I think the absence of Collison is probably going to hurt with that here. But on the flip side, the Celtics shot, what are they, 62% from three when they play, or 16-26 in that first matchup. Like, that's incredibly hot. You'd expect that number to come down to earth. So again, kind of the ebbs and flows of, is Indiana going to be able to force as many turnovers? Probably not, but the Celtics might not be able to make as many shots, especially on the second day of a back-to-back where they're flying home from Washington.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the only thing that the Pacers have going for them. Well, you know, that they have a pretty significant rest. Did you see their game got canceled Wednesday against?
Yeah. Yeah.
They have a pretty significant rest advantage over the Celtics in this one, who are flying, yeah, like you just said, flying in on a back-to-back. Speaking of Marcus Smart, did you know that he is 12 of 14, including 5 of 6 from 3 against the Pacers this year?
Nah, maybe he likes Banker's Life Field.
How frustrating is that?
Yeah, that's – of all the guys that's going to beat you,
you can't miss. You cannot miss. It's very frustrating. And you know, a lot of – like, Pacers fans get frustrated because – a lot of guys like him in the role player role just seem like they just happen to have good games against the Pacers. It's not a coincidence. They just like do not defend those guys as well as other teams do. But I don't think he's going to keep shooting that well.
No, and there's no way he can. He's got to come back down to earth. But I mean, the Celtics, it's been kind of a grueling week for them. They lost a bad game at Toronto in a showdown for top of the East on Tuesday, and then, you know, the Thursday game at DC, they fly back home for a Friday night home game with Indiana. And then Sunday, they got Cleveland coming to town right away. So they cannot look past the Pacers right now. But if there's one time to kind of catch Boston sleeping, this might be the opportunity.
And as we are recording, they're in a heated 68-66 battle with Washington. So no rest for their stars in this Pacers game, which is nice. In that first game, that one, then the 108-98 win in Boston, that was Miles Turner's first game back from injury, or first start back from injury, I believe. The Celtics were just better. Turner was the only positive for the Pacers in that game, and that's kind of what I fear. Oladipo didn't play in that one, by the way. That was the big one there, but, you know, just a weird game. I can't really use it as an analog without Oladipo, but Turner was really good, so I think there's hope for him to be an impact player in this one, but given that Horford's such a good defender, I don't expect a ton from him. So I think it's going to be more like the second game, just with a more tired Celtics team, and plus Greg Monroe, if I had to guess.
Yeah, and Boston has tried to match up a little bit bigger with Indiana when they've played this year because the Pacers have both Young and Turner as two guys that are a little bit bigger and play on the interior that you can start. So Again, that's probably a good matchup for Indiana, so to speak, because it takes Boston out of their normal flow with their ball movement and spacing. But it should be a good one.
Let's get the official Coach Spins game prediction.
At home, it's hard for me to go against my Celtics. So I'm going to say 110-103 Boston.
Brad Stevens back in the homeland.
Yeah, that's my guy.
Lionsville High School. Go Eagles. Brad Stevens graduate and a Butler grad. But yeah, I if they had played the Pels, I probably would have picked the Celtics too. But I think 4 days off is just enormous. And, no Collison is huge, but Joseph's done well in his stead. And Joe Young looked awesome as a backup point guard in their last game. I don't know if that can continue, but I might pick a close Pacers win just for the rest thing. And, maybe like 105, 102. They show that they can beat the Celtics at home if they don't make boneheaded plays. So maybe just don't dig a huge hole to start and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, again, this is a trap game if there ever was one for the Celtics. And I think, let's see, Pacers are 2-0 this year with more than 3 days rest. So You're right, this could bode in their favor.
Where did you just get that from?
That's on Basketball Reference. You go to their team page.
Oh, the splits, yeah.
Yeah, you go down to splits. You can check out all that stuff.
I knew that. That was quick. You got it so fast. You got anything you want to promote before you get out of here? But before you answer, I want to promote something for you.
Oh, boy.
Coach Spins, I'll just call you Adam for this, does these YouTube breakdown series for NBA Math. He just did a bunch of trade deadline ones, but a lot of them are X's and O's things and like little intricacies of the sport that go on. And I always learn something cool from them. I learned how Gortat sets such effective screens, why he leads the league in screen assists. And it turns out Sabonis steals some of his styles from him. I learned about, out of bounds plays some teams run. And it's really fascinating. And you are doubling in the post, things I just never know anything about. I learn something every time I watch them. So if you want to learn more about literally anything on the court, you should watch them.
Oh, thank you, Tony. Appreciate that. The only other thing to really plug here, I'd just say is keep reading a bunch of stuff online. There's a ton of great NBA writers out there. And I think that as long as you're looking for good, insightful articles to read, you can find them. Tony does always a great writer, does a great job with all his articles. I read everything you put out there, Tony. But again, for anyone listening, like Twitter is an unbelievable resource in today's day and age, and you can find so many great, insightful pieces out there. So keep your eyes open and always be willing to read and to learn.
Oh, that's a good plug. That was really heartfelt. I hope everyone keeps reading stuff too. There has been a flush of good content recently, and all the crappy trade rumor pieces are gone too. So now literally every piece of content will be improved.
That's the hope anyway.
Yes, that is the hope. Where can people follow your work and you?
Oh, thank you, Tony. Yeah, I am at on Twitter at Spinella14. That's Spinella 14. Do a bunch of stuff on NBA Math, B-ball breakdown, and then I'm also, if you're into the X's and O's and kind of the nerdy stuff, Fast Model Sports and Fast Draw programs. I do a lot of X's and O's sets for them that you can find.
Yeah, Fast Model is really cool. I learn a lot of plays from them. But the Pacers run, I got a few of them from there too. So be on the lookout for those. I'm at TEastNBA. You all know that. You listen. The podcast at Locked On Pacers. Two away from 325. Help us get there. Have a nice weekend. We'll recap this game and the Knicks game come Monday. We'll have some stuff about their only game next week. But we'll have to let you know about the schedule. Thanks for listening. See you guys next time.